Hello, everyone. Frank and Darren here. Slaughter Lamb. Hey, everyone. Frank and Darren here, back again with the Slaughter Lamb podcast, and this time, Halloween. We're going through the whole franchise. Maybe not talking about Rob Zombie's Halloweens, but we can't wait. We are getting excited. We're going through the franchise, and Darren, this is a long time coming. People have requested this. And you know what? It's our favorite franchise of horror, and we have to talk about it because, as they say for Christmas, 'tis the season.
Let's do it.
Hello, everyone. Frank and Darren here for Slaughter Lamb Podcast. We are talking Halloween 1, the best and the worst moments of this movie. Darren, it's so hard. There's so many best moments, not too many worst moments, but we had to drill down to them. And I think it's safe to say that this is our favorite horror movie of all time and continues to be.
That's my favorite movie, I think. I mean, it kind of, you know, I mean, there's a few that jostle for that top position.
Guilty pleasures.
There's a few that jostle for the top position with the likes of Jaws and The Fog and Escape, mainly Carpenter films, The Thing, Escape from New York, that kind of stuff. But Halloween pretty much is always at the top and has been ever since I was a small boy. I think I saw this film, we've talked about this before, but I saw this film when I was, I think, 8 or 9.
It's a wee lad.
Yeah. I saw it in about 80, 81. My dad borrowed a VHS player for the weekend, and along with the likes of things like, it must have been 81. What is it, 81, 82? I'm just starting to think now because E.T. was one of the films that he borrowed as well. So it must have been around about 82. Along with this VHS player came all these bootleg VHSs.
Your dad's sting operations.
And we sat and watched Halloween one night, and I was traumatized for a few years, but at the same time obsessed with it. You know, it was one of those things that really became an obsession for me. And as the film, the sequels came out over the subsequent years, they became an obsession as well. But, you know, as we know, sadly, this franchise is a bit of a roller coaster, and you know, there are more lows than there are highs, I'd say. But, you know, throughout this series, we're going to try and balance it all out and look for some good stuff within the actual movies that we don't consider to be, you know, the best in the series. So, you know, we thought we'd kick off with the first Halloween. Why not? So let's go for it. This is based around 6 questions that we're going to ask each other. Mm-hmm. And then culminating with our favorite moment within the film. So shall we kick off? Frank, who is your best character?
Definitely Dr. Loomis. You know, you could say Michael, but you know what? It's that's obvious.
He's not really a character, though, is he? He's
just but kind you of could say Michael entity. Myers, right? You could say, "Oh, Michael Myers," but it's the reason why we go see Halloween is because of Michael Myers, the boogeyman, the shape. But next to him, the best character is got to be Loomis, Donald Pleasance. That man was born to play that role.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to change his accent. People loved his accent. You know, I think that's. For me, it's got to be Loomis. You can't, you know, the other characters for me, they're just second fiddle to him.
Yeah. I know what you mean about his accent. There are now and again, there's some real kind of almost like Cockney creeping into his accent, especially in Halloween 2, you know, when he's telling Michael to leave the, when he's telling Laurie to leave the hospital room as he's turned all the gas on. And he turns around and goes, "Get out now!" And it's like, it's like, what? Are you in the East End of London or something?
So who is your best character?
It's the same. It's of absolutely course, the same. Of course. You know, it's got to be. I don't, you know, when thinking about Michael Myers, I never consider him to be a character at all. Like, he's this thing. He's this force. He's this entity. He's a great white shark. I don't consider him a person even. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's one of those things that I cannot say that he's my favorite character at all. I can say he's my favorite slasher, but not my favorite character. And, you know, Loomis for me always gives, without Loomis, there's no Myers really, because he gives him so much mystique.
He emphasizes what Michael is.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just says,
yeah.
You know, he is what Captain Ahab to Moby Dick.
Yeah, he's his voice, you know, because he translates to us how dangerous this guy is and what he's capable of and what he was like when he was growing up and, you know, the sort of situations that they've been in with him. So Loomis translates this to us throughout all the movies that he's in. And gives him.
You just reminded me, if Michael was the white rabbit from Monty Python, the Holy Grail, Loomis would be the bridge keeper or the fire sorcerer. I told you, no one believes me. It's that same thing. I told you how dangerous he is. I mean, no one fucking cares.
I'm always drawn to Loomis. Every time anybody asks me, who's your favorite character within the franchise? It's always going to be Loomis. You know, and even though as the series goes on, he becomes more, you know, maniacal and obsessive and unhinged throughout, he's still fun to watch.
Kind of steals every scene.
Yeah, he does. Absolutely. He's a professional. And, you know, they always said they were in awe of him, and so they should be. Donald Pleasance was an absolute icon.
Yeah. And his favorite pastime was sniffing hair in movie theater.
What? Oh, in
Terror in the Isles.
Terror in the Isles. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Creeping through between people, yeah.
Stealing their popcorn. So, since you asked me a first question, let me ask you the next question. Who is the worst character now for you?
So, the worst character for me, and it doesn't surprise me that she's no longer an actress. I, you know, nothing against her personally at all, but every film that I've seen her in, her performances for me have been not up to scratch. And I think that Nancy Loomis, or Nancy Keys, as she known now, as Annie in
really?
Halloween, yeah, is just so wooden. I mean, she only had one appearance in Halloween 2, and she f***ed that up. Her eyes blinked.
Bitch,
she was playing
blinked.
The corpse, and her
keep
eyes
going,
blinked.
Keep going, just roll. Keep going, we can't do this again.
But no, I mean, it's the scene. I always think that she spoils the scene with the three girls as they're walking home. Some of that dialogue there, just,
you know, you knew a girl like Annie in high school. There was always a girl like her.
There was, but I think the issue for me is that Nancy Loomis wasn't a girl. PJ Souls was a little bit older. Jamie Lee Curtis was still a teenager, right? She was in her late teens, I think, when they filmed Halloween, I think 18 or 19. Nancy Loomis was 29, and she was trying to portray this schoolgirl. And for me, it doesn't quite come across right. And every scene that she's in, I just feel that there's a slight woodenness to her.
Like she doesn't care.
And it also comes across in the likes of The Fog as well. And also in Halloween 3, she's terrible.
Oh, she's
awful.
Bitch. Bitch. Where's the six
she
pack?
Was.
Where's that robot? Where's that fuck? Where's that real doll?
Yeah, yeah. But and also, you know, with Charles Cyphers plays her dad in this film. He was only 39. So the
Jesus
age gap
Christ.
Between the, she was 39. 39 years old was Charles Cyphers when he did Halloween.
He
almost looks as old as Donald Pleasance, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's like a wrinkle. He's got crow's feet. You and I look pretty good for our age. We don't have any wrinkles. You're like, excuse me, Laurie. Pervert. You know, but he's that old.
He's that old. And so there's only 10 years between Nancy Loomis and Charles Cyphers. But I think that her efforts of trying to play a schoolgirl I guess what they were trying to play 16-year-old girls, 17-year-old girls.
Something like that, yeah.
For me, it just doesn't come across quite right. And
Now that he explained it, yeah, I could see that. You know, it is a problem with her character. It's just that she was looking to get into John Carpenter's pants.
Well, I think she was just part of that clique, wasn't she? Wasn't Tommy Lee Wallace married to her at that point or something?
They all fucked each other. There was one big orgy on that set. You know, between Donald and Deborah and Tommy and Nancy. Jesus Christ. Fuck. And Jamie Lee kissing Nick Castle through the mask. Keep the mask on. Don't ruin it.
Yeah. It was like the set of See You Next Wednesday, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, my worst character is Bob.
Okay.
For, you know, the line, "We'll take Lindsay's clothes off," and him just, you know, he was just, I think he was kind of creepy. But you know what pissed me off more? But his kill is iconic. It's an iconic kill. Things that bother me about the character is it's certainly not him personally. His glasses are way too fucking big, which
they're
bother
huge,
me.
Huge, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like satellite dishes. And
he's like an owl.
His feet are terrible.
Yeah, yeah. When he's
all
when
bony
he's
kind of... and shit. He doesn't let out a scream when he dies.
No, he just makes this noise like someone's sticking a knife into a grapefruit.
Yeah. And he doesn't give. They you know, they recreated that in the first Rob Zombie remake.
Mm.
But that one you can actually feel go in.
Yeah. Yeah.
This one, it was just, you know, a hard hit to the closet door or the pantry door, and he was just.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe because he couldn't scream because Michael was choking him. Maybe that's the reason.
His head kind of flops forward slightly, doesn't it? Not all the way. I mean, if he'd really been stabbed, his head would have been kind of right down here somewhere.
But he still stares at him.
It sort of flops forward slightly. And then when you get that kind of side shot where Michael's sort of admiring his work on the wall, Bob's head's back.
Mm-hmm.
It's back against the door.
Back
into the left. Yeah, against a wall. Yeah, back and to the left. Back and to the left.
So continuity errors there.
Yeah. But no, I mean, we're ladies and gentlemen, we're just being facetious here. We're just having fun with a movie. We do love it, but you know, we're just having fun with it for now.
We do.
Yeah, I bought these pumpkins as well. Can you see them?
All right, our next category. What do you think, for yourself, what is the best line in Halloween?
My favorite line, I think it's the graveyard scene, and it's not the Charlie Bowles speech. Everybody would always say that Loomis's speech is, "I watched him in a room, sitting in a wall, staring at a wall." No, it's not that. And that is great. That's fantastic. But I just thought I'm going to put that one aside because that would be too obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think when I watched it this morning, I watched the 4K version this morning with the 7.1 mix, which I'm kind of a bit sort of, I was tempted to put it back onto the mono mix. There's something about that kind of Dolby Digital mix that they've done that doesn't quite sit right, particularly in the scene at the start where you get Loomis and Marion in the nurse Marion in the car. They've done something to the lightning and the thunder effects, which sound way too sort of advanced for the actual sound recording that was done back in the 70s, and it just doesn't sit right for me. There's a couple of moments in the film where they've added these odd little effects in, and I'm not quite sure who approved them, but, you know, they're fine, but they just niggle me slightly. Best line in the film is just simply, "He came home." And it's that moment where Loomis realizes that the grave's been stolen. Everything hits home to him that, Jesus Christ, he's come back to Haddonfield. He started his, you know, rampage. He's taken the gravestone, and I think everything starts to sink in as to, shit, how am I going to put this right? And that line, "he came home," is kind of, for me, sort of, well, it's for everyone as well, is synonymous with the film, you know, used on all the marketing, "the night he came home." And yeah, I just think he delivers it so perfectly. And the look on his face of dread as to sort of, damn, what have I done? It's for me, it's just, it's a great line.
I agree with you. The, it's on every box. Like you said, "the night he came home." Mm. But Loomis had, well, it's of course not a pleasance, but Loomis had this way of, when he knew something was going to happen, when he knew he was going to go to Haddonfield, because he told Dr. Wynn and he told whoever he was talking to on the, in the phone booth, and probably the Phelps is probably still sitting there in that, those fucking reeds.
Do you think he's still, do you think he was ever found?
I don't know if he's even counted as part of his kill list. Michael's kill list. They said he killed like six people. Are they counting him? Did he even kill the people in the sanitarium in Smith's Grove? Because, you know, we see the patients, they're walking around, but someone had to notice them besides, you know, Nurse Karen and Loomis at first.
And yes. Yeah.
Did he kill any? We don't know if he killed any doctors, any guards, any other patients on his way out. We don't know that. But Loomis,
it is a creepy moment, oh, though, crazy. Is that
that scared me to death when I saw as a kid that music coming on, there's these white gowns walking around, I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'd be creepy just seeing that in real life. I'm like, turn around. Turn around.
And you're talking of the white gowns, when Pleasance finds the Phelps truck, there's a gown on the bush, I think, and also a gown on the car.
On the door. Where,
why is there? Why are there two gowns? Was Michael kind of wrapped up warm himself for the night or something? You know, was he?
He shat himself.
maybe he had to change in the night or something.
But he was always contemplating. He's like, the night he came home, he knew he was coming there, but like you said, the gravestone, the headstone missing, just proved his theory right. Mm. He was always telling himself, you know, this is what he's going to do. This is what he's going to do next. He hoped it wasn't going to happen, but Michael always left evidence that what Loomis thought was going to happen, Michael did it, proved his theories.
Yeah.
And no one else could see it until it's too late. I agree with you. Yep.
Yeah.
For me, it's probably the second most used line on T-shirts and memorabilia and probably some box art on DVDs and movies, and that's, "death has come to your little town."
Yes.
That's just...
Yep. Yep.
Tells everything.
Yep. Yep.
I don't have to explain it.
No. It's a great line. Great line. So, worst line. What is your worst line?
You ready? Laurie telling Tommy what Halloween is all about after he sees the boogeyman for the first time, and explaining how what's his name was saying that the boogeyman was real. Lonnie was telling him about the boogeyman, and Laurie goes, "Tommy, Halloween is about people playing tricks on each other. There's no boogeyman. I'm certainly here. Nothing's going to happen to you." I'm just like, really? You know, what do you want to do? Let's go do the jack-o'-lantern. Okay. It's like explaining to a kid, you know, she should have said, you know, the boogeyman's not real. But she does say, and it's just Lonnie trying to scare you. But to me, I don't need that explanation.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've never really thought of that before. There are a few lines in there that kind of are used to sort of diffuse certain situations. That's one of them. Where he's obviously really anxious about what's going to happen on Halloween. And the other one, which is kind of a really clever line, which is used to diffuse a situation and to kind of shut up naysayers and things like that, is the Dr. Wynn line, when he says, you know, "Sam Haddonfield's 150 miles away. For God's sakes, he can't drive a car." And Loomis replies, "he was doing very well last night. Maybe someone around here gave him lessons." And it's like, you know, it's a major plot hole, which they obviously realized, but they just dealt with it with a kind of throwaway line that people just kind of go, oh, okay, fair enough, move on. You know, it doesn't need to be kind of, you know, scrutinized any further. They've addressed the fact that they know there's a plot hole and dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that line was really smart, but the worst line for me is something you've mentioned already. And it was something for years that I never even thought about until, I guess, the era of Me Too and things like that. And that is when they're in the truck, Bob and Linda are in the truck. And you know, first I rip your clothes off, then you rip my clothes off, and then we rip Lindsay's clothes off.
Oh, I thought that's hilarious.
And it's just like, Lindsay's an 8-year-old girl or something, for God's sake. Where did that come from? Was that in the... I want to know if that was in the script. Did that come from Carpenter, or did that come from... I can't remember the guy's name now.
Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance.
Maybe we should audition. I've been thinking about it.
If anybody knows where that line comes from, was it in the original script? Pop it in the comments down below, because I'd love to know. I have read the original script a long time ago, but again, that line didn't kind of resonate with me back then. But now every time I watch Halloween, and that's a few times a year, every time I hear that line, I just kind of go, ooh. In a bad way, not in a good way.
I want to be an accessory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because I had to put, because Bob is just a creep anyway. Give him a couple beers and he's off the wall and horny. But they leave that line in. I would think in this day and age, they would cut that line out, but no, they leave it in the movie. But I remember back in the day, society was so creepy that we had a Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen ticker for when they turned 18.
A similar thing happened in the UK. So we have, you've probably heard of the Page Three girls that we have in the UK. Yeah. And there was a documentary recently about Page Three girls and a really famous British Page Three girl called Samantha Fox.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard
who, Samantha Fox, yeah. She's a pop star as well. And back in the 80s, they had a countdown on each day in the newspaper until her 16th birthday.
Ooh.
When she was going to be derobed and she would be topless in the paper. A countdown for a 15-year-old girl. We live in different times now.
No, Jesus.
We're
going somewhere else now.
Well, I was just going to say, before we finish that, it wouldn't be too bad if they used that line in Halloween Kills. Now, that's a different story.
Oh, for her now. I don't think they meant Julian.
No.
This is awful. Okay. All right. Now we're getting down to the nitty gritty here. What is your best kill?
Best kill. Now I thought about this because I think they're all pretty good. Apart from my worst one, which we'll go on to in a little bit. But the best kill for me is, I think it's Linda's kill. I just think the you know, we know Bob's dead. The door opens, the sheet's over Michael. Bob's glasses are over the sheet. And that image of that ghostly Michael Myers standing there, and just all you can... here is the breathing. That's it. There's no movement, nothing. Just the breathing. The reason why I like it is it's because I guess it's that iconic moment when we get to see the mask close up for the first time. Mm. He strangles Linda with the phone line, and we get this kind of tremendously well-lit shot. The Dean Cundey obviously, you know, put blue lights in there and everything just to give that mask a more kind of ghostly feel. You get a real close-up of it, and it's in the top corner right there. It just looks fantastic. And, you know, I remember pausing it as a kid and just being obsessed with this mask, this kind of lifeless mask, and thinking that it still is one of the creepiest images. I think it's lost a lot of its appeal over the years because it's kind of so, it's so part of pop culture now. But back then when I was a kid, it was just the most terrifying thing I'd ever seen. So for that reason, Linda's kill and the lead up to that reveal of the mask is my favorite kill in not just the movie itself, but possibly in the whole franchise as well.
I agree. It's an iconic moment, especially like you said, when he has the sheet over him, because there's pins of that depiction of him. There's posters of him like that, you know, bobbleheads of Ghost Myers. And that's, I think that's what they call him, right? Ghost Myers or Bob Myers, something like that.
Yeah.
And it, when you see that blue lighting come on that mask for the full time, for the first time, you know, it's not to mention, you know, PJ's, you know, shirt open up and, but yeah, that kill. Yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely iconic. And her, and then Lori hearing Linda dying, but not really on the phone, 'cause she has no idea what's going on until at the end.
Yeah,
so it's just heavy breathing. He's like, "What the hell?"
Okay, yeah,
good for you. My best kill is Bob's kill.
Mm.
I look at movies when I see a slasher or a killer, a serial killer. I want to know what they're all about. How dangerous is this person? And when I saw Michael lift Bob off his feet for the first time by the neck, I was like, this guy's got some strength. You know, not to mention, you know, he carried a tombstone.
Yeah. You know, can you imagine? If we'd have seen that as well, him trying to sling it at the back of Loomis's car.
But you don't know. Just because he stole it doesn't mean he carried it out.
Yeah.
He could have lifted it with a couple jacks. Who knows what he did? But him lifting Bob for the first time, and I was just like, as a kid, my God, is he strong?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I tried doing that with my brother, and I couldn't. I tried to choke him and lift him up. Parents going, put your brother down. You know, but for me, that's Bob's kill is iconic, and for me, the best kill for me.
Yeah, Halloween. Yeah. It's like when you say that about the tombstone, it's almost like there is a whole other movie that we could see from, so, you know, of somebody following Michael around and the things that he does in this film, you know, starting from stripping off the bloody mechanic in the long grass to get his coveralls to
washing
to
trying his to face.
Dig, digging it, yeah, digging out a bloody a gravestone to sling into the back of the car. Then after he's killed Bob, hoiking him upstairs and tying him upside down and setting a trap or whatever he does in the ceiling. Yeah, exactly. Lifting that old tombstone up into the bedroom and chucking it onto the back of the bed. Then he's got to get Annie out of the car and lift her upstairs. And then he's got to pick PJ up and stick her in the cupboard and set some sort of wire up so that the door opens on cue.
Yep.
Ah, there's a lot there, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, I would like to see him after he killed Mr. Phelps. If he was walking towards the station wagon and he stopped, backed up to the phone booth, and checked to see if there was change.
Just put his finger in there, like you used to do as a kid. Just kind of check it. See if is there anything in it? Nah.
No. They just kept walking. Fantastic. But Bob, best kill for me. All right. There's not too many of them, but your worst kill of Halloween.
The worst kill is, and this is a thing about John Carpenter in the 70s, was that he loved to break taboos. And one of my taboos, I think everybody's taboos are, you don't kill kids and you don't kill animals. And what does he do in Assault on Precinct 13? He blows a hole through a 12-year-old girl while she's buying an ice cream. And in Halloween, he kills not one, but two dogs. You know, we have the dog that's in the house, which he's obviously got from somewhere, and
he was hungry.
They say he's eaten it or something. And then there's also Lester.
Maybe killed it like Lenny of Mice and Men. Just pet it too hard.
Yeah, maybe. This thing about killing dogs. It's I know you're not a fan. This is probably your worst kill as well, I would imagine. Is it?
You already took it. It's fine. You know what? Because I put it away from my memory every time I see it. But you know, now that you hashed it out of my brain again, thank you.
Poor old Lester.
All right, my worst kill is Phelps. You know why? Because we don't see anything. I don't know why. I don't know why he's dead. You know, I don't know why Freddie Mercury is dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember that's what Dave said. He looks like Freddie Mercury.
He does look like Freddie Mercury. For years, I never understood what had happened to him. I mean, if you were lucky, because of the ratios, when I first saw this film,
Go ahead, yes.
Exactly. The TV standard would only show, you know, a 4:3 image. And so you were lucky if you got Phelps's head on the screen. But the kind of the anamorphic version that we've now all got on Blu-ray and 4K and everything, you can clearly see that Phelps is naked and he's been he looks like he's been stabbed in the chest. Mm-hmm. He's got blood all over his chest. And it's probably the goriest kill throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Other than Judith, I guess.
That's not seen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You don't see it, you know, which is fine. I mean, Halloween is known for not is showing off-screen kills and victims.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I watched the first one as a kid, and they panned over to these, you know, weeds or, you know, the grains or whatever they are, I'm like, what's over there? What are they showing?
Exactly. As a kid, you had no idea because if you were lucky, you got the top of his head from there in the side of the frame.
And even then, you're guessing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's for me because I don't know. He could have had a freaking heart attack for all we know. Mm. But it's safe to say that Michael killed him. But we don't even know, like we said, if is Phelps considered part of his kill count. They must have discovered him. They must have.
Somebody can let us know down below. Was Phelps considered as part of the kill count?
Please.
Because they mention on the news in Halloween 2, don't they? They just mention three teenagers were killed.
Yeah. And I think in part 4 later on, they might include him.
Right, right.
Might. I don't know.
Or is it Lester?
Oh. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, this is a tough one because there's so many. What is your best moment? There's so many, but which moment for you made Halloween your favorite movie?
See, this was, again, I have a couple of moments that are sort of jostling for the top place on this. But I think it's You Can't Kill the Boogeyman. I was torn between that and Myers sitting up in the background. But I think it's You Can't Kill the Boogeyman. I just love that kind of quick pan shot across the room to Michael. And the fact that you can hear him as well. You can sort of see something moving in the background, mm-hmm. and you can hear the slow plod of him walking up the stairs, and then You Can't Kill the Boogeyman, and that quick pan and zoom over to Myers stood on the landing is terrific. So I think that's my, and that's where you really see Laurie take control for the first time. It's almost like she's at the point where she's turning the tables now. You know, she's been chased throughout all of this, and now she becomes the protector. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can tell by her voice, get in there, Tommy, lock the door. Do you know what I mean? She's fired up and she's ready and she's going to deal with this. And so I think that's why You Can't Kill the Boogeyman is my favorite moment. And again, a line that's been used that represents the franchise.
I agree. The if you had, like you said, that 4-3 ratio, you didn't see him walk up. You didn't even see a shadow until panned over to him standing behind, which is creepy within itself, just seeing him behind her. But that 16-9, when you see his shadow walking up, there's nothing creepier to me than knowing somebody is coming up the steps.
Yeah.
Because you have in your flat, in your apartment, in your house, that's the way to get down into safety, unless you're going to go out the fucking window. Yeah, he's coming up the way you're supposed to exit. We know Myers exit out the window anyway.
Yeah.
But that's definitely. And there's no music until we actually see him for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. Yep. I like your choice. Mm. So for me, the best moment that sums up Halloween and the reason why I like the franchise so much is after Laurie discovers the bodies of her friends, she runs to the end of the hall and there's an open door. And Michael's face just slowly is visible and comes out. Yeah. Scared the living shit of me as a kid. And that ding from the music comes
on. Yeah.
And he's been sitting there looking at her. And he's a terrible, he misses terribly. but I know she was walking away and he missed her. But that blue lighting, and he comes visible, it just shocks me every time. It's my favorite moment of the whole entire Halloween franchise. Every single one. Yeah. That moment for me is iconic. Him coming in because he's in the darkness. You won't see him until it's too late.
And they've tried to replicate it a few times throughout the franchise, haven't they? They tried it in Halloween 2, which works well with one of the nurses when he kind of puts the syringe into her face. And also in Halloween 2018, they tried to do it in reverse with Laurie Strode kind of appearing in the background. It's diminishing returns. It doesn't quite work at all as well as that moment you're talking about on the staircase or the top of the stairs in Halloween. Fantastic. And again, that sting, that diddly, that music, just, spine tingling, terrific stuff. Really, really iconic.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, we got done with the best and worst of Halloween. There's so many best moments and very little worst. Very, very little. Minute. On a microscopic level.
There is one other thing I want to mention, which I don't know if many people do know this, but I know you're aware, Frank, but for the people watching, are people aware that Leslie Nielsen is actually in Halloween?
He is. Ladies and gentlemen, he is.
He is.
His voice is very recognizable.
It is. It's right after Annie's kill. The scene cuts to Lindsay watching the TV. And Leslie Nielsen's on the TV starring in Forbidden Planet. And if you listen closely, his voice stands out a mile. Mm-hmm. So Leslie Nielsen has a secret cameo by default in Halloween 78.
I don't think enough for a credit, though, right?
I think I'd demand that. They must have done something. They must have, I mean, it's interesting as well that Tommy Lee Wallace does the voice hosting those movies, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. He seems to fill in a lot of the, does quite a few of the voiceovers throughout the first two movies, I think. There's a moment in Halloween 2, which we'll talk about in the next episode, which Tommy Lee Wallace overdubbed. But I think that kind of wraps everything up for us, doesn't it?
It does. Those moments that we just listed are the reason why we love this movie so much. It's, I have memorabilia all over the place, as people can see. and Darren, this is one series that you actually have probably physical media of.
Yes. Oh yeah. No, I've kept all the, I even have the kind of, in for the 25th anniversary, there was a DVD that came out which the color grade was screwed up on, and the movie looks completely different. It looks almost like sepia throughout, and it was a mistake by the Anchor Bay who brought it out. And yeah, I can barely watch that. It's just it looks so muddy and
but you kept it.
I kept it, though. I'm not going to get rid of it. I've got so many different versions of this film, honestly. And different versions of the movies that I don't even like, you know, in the franchise. They're all on one shelf upstairs. But also, I've got posters and Nick Castle's signature. I've got John Carpenter's signature on a kind of Mondo vinyl that came out a few years ago. And there are little things like that that now and again I'll splash out on. But yeah, it is my go-to movie, my favorite movie of all time, and one I never tire of watching at all. And something that, and a movie that every time I watch it, I discover something new. Like today, I was telling you this earlier, watching, I don't know why I've never noticed this, whether it was something to do with the framing back in the 80s, the 4:3 versions that I was obsessively watching. But after Brackett bumps into Laurie, I never realized Brackett smoked a pipe.
Yep.
He kind of walks off and quickly puts a pipe into his mouth, which I've never noticed before. I don't know why. And then you kind of see him walking towards his house from behind with this big pipe in his mouth.
Big bong.
Yeah, yeah. Now, not only does Laurie have to put up with him kind of smarmily perving over her when he bumps into her, oh, sorry, Laurie, or whatever it is he says.
Excuse me, Laurie.
Yeah. He's breathing his hoary pipe breath all over her as well. But yeah, there's always something different that we pick up on every time whenever I watch it. I mean, probably everybody knows about the pipe. It's just me that was dumb and never spotted it, I guess.
But it's always on my house. My wife knows, you know, she gets me half of the stuff behind me. She got me this shirt. You know, it's an obsession that, because I will say that I'll admit it. It is an obsession of mine. And it's a franchise for me that is dearly loved, because some of the best moments in my lifetime happened around watching this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what Halloween means to me. So, but we're going to continue with the franchise. We're going to go to Halloween 2 next. But as always, stick to the roads.
Subscribe and like, and the best of luck.
Goodbye. Bye. Happy Halloween.